Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I am Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
On this episode, we bring in a special guest to talk about Alabama, Michigan's opponent in its college football playoff semifinal at the Rose Bowl. What are the Crimson Tide's strengths and weaknesses, and how do they match up with Michigan? We discuss coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be with you here Thursday morning, December 14th. And we've got a special guest on. It's Nick Alvarez of AL.com, one of MLive.com's sister sites under the Advance local umbrella. Nick, thanks for coming on to talk about Alabama.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited not just to talk with you guys today, but to get ready toward this game in Pasadena.
Absolutely. January 1st at the Rose Bowl, number one seed Michigan versus number four seed Alabama for a spot in the college football national championship. And Nick, let's just start with how Alabama kind of got here. It doesn't seem like it was the typical maybe Alabama season of recent years where they were just, you know, dominant throughout the season. They fell out of the top 10 of the AP poll for the first time in 8 years. So I don't want to say it was a grind necessarily to get to this game, but it certainly didn't seem like it was necessarily expected. Maybe in late September, I guess, can you kind of speak to that and how Alabama ended up in this game?
For sure. I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, there was panic down here after week three. So they lose week two at home against Texas. Jalen Milroe throws two interceptions in the second half. And then the week after, he gets benched for Tyler Buchner, who's still with the team, but going to play lacrosse for Notre Dame next year and was leaving football. And Ty Simpson, who is a former five-star freshman, and they play in a downpour game that gets weather delayed for about an hour in Tampa against South Florida, against the coordinator that dominated them a year prior in the Alabama-Tennessee game, Alex Golesh. And they looked ugly. Like, it didn't look great. Jalen Milroe did not play at all. He wasn't necessarily benched, but that's kind of what it is in practice. And then he comes back, and they handle themselves against Ole Miss pretty well. Then they kind of, you know, play some uneven ball. And then the second half in that Tennessee game, they come out, score within three plays, cut the lead, and then within 5 minutes, they're dominating that game. And that really starts a trend going where in the second half of these SEC games, they just start dominating and really getting it locked in defensively. Offensively, Jalen Milroe has stopped turning the ball over and really embraced the offense with Tommy Rees. And then, you know, the last couple of weeks, ever since really they shut down LSU and Jaden Daniels, that became, you know, well, how really good is this team? Who have they played yet? And then they, you know, didn't make the mistake that Georgia did to win that SEC championship game. So it's definitely not the normal Alabama growth over the season in terms of where they started to where they are now. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of, if not the best defenses in the country compared to the ones that you guys have seen all year. And then offense that, you know, can get you in a couple of different ways.
Now, before we get into Alabama, like deep dive, I want to know what's the perception of maybe Michigan and the Big Ten down there? Because this is going to be the sixth all-time meeting between the two schools, the last play in the 2020 Citrus Bowl. But before then, these two schools hadn't played in almost a decade. So I'm just wondering what the Alabama, like the feeling is down there. What do they think about Michigan? And what do they think about the Big Ten?
I think what's interesting about that part of it is when everyone's kind of having their bowl theories of who'd get left out and, you know, ended up being Florida State. There's never really a conversation of like the loser of the Michigan-Ohio State game getting in. And I think that's either like this some like an inherent Big Ten SEC biases down here of thinking, well, like, oh, Georgia may have a shot, but turns out neither of them had the case. And I think it's more of a general, like, Alabama can't really put its chest out there after the year it had with losing a game and not being favored in a couple of their big matchups. But overall, like, I don't think Alabama fans are thinking about this as a 4-1 matchup. I think if anything, they probably think about it as 4-1 the other way, and they just would have preferred getting the local game in New Orleans compared to going out west. I don't think it's pure disrespect that maybe the ACC has gotten over the last couple of weeks, but I do think there's kind of all the historical elements that Greg Sankey will mention whenever he gets in front of a microphone of like, look at the SEC's track record in the bowl games, in these playoff games. I think fans have only adopted that if it only helps their, you know, water cooler arguments to get in, see who gets in the playoff.
Going back to Alabama season real quick, did you think, can you point to anything in particular that might have fueled their turnaround, or was there anything maybe Saban said to motivate this team and get them back on track? Or, I mean, it seems like quite the stark turnaround from the Texas and South Florida game to where they are now.
I would say defensively, there was a bit of a kind of uproar and ultimately kind of a laughing point when Lane Kiffin made the assumption that, in fact, it was Alabama's defensive backs and associate head coach, Javaris Robinson, who was calling the plays and not returning defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele. And there was a bunch of discourse about that, Steele being in the booth and Robinson actually signaling the plays in. And I think you can maybe point to some continuity there. But if you want to really point at it, I would think the offensive line was at a historically bad pace in the beginning of the season. They were allowing 3, 4, 5 sacks a game to no matter who they played. USF in that week 3 game, they had their program record, I think, with 5 sacks, which they hadn't set for like 5, 6 years when they played UConn, which is one of those stats that Alabama shouldn't be in the same sentence with. And then I think toward the back half of the season, Jaden Roberts at right guard settled in. Caden Proctor, a freshman who went through a bunch of growing pains earlier in the year, got a lot better. And then really, ultimately, Jalen Milroe stopped turning the ball over. That was the big question coming into the season. And not only did he stop turning the ball over, you know, he made plays like 4th and 31 in the Iron Bowl. He made plays like the game, you know, ending, the little flip against Georgia that ran the clock down. So little things like that, in addition to, I think, Saban just being able to embrace the fact that he gets to watch a team grow and not, you know, have a team that's number one and going to try to, you know, keep that all year.
Keeping this on the Jalen Milroe track, I mean, his numbers, when you look at him for the season, have been really good. I mean, he's completed more than 65% of his passes. He's thrown for over 2,700 yards, 23 touchdowns. He's rushed for 468 and 12. Give Michigan fans kind of idea of, maybe for those who haven't seen a ton of Jalen Milroe, what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, and maybe what changed between that Texas game and the end of the season.
From a fan viewpoint, I'd rip my hair out if I had to watch my team go up against Jalen Milroe on a game day. There are some plays where he's going to be running around the pocket and he's going to have nowhere to throw the ball and he won't throw it away. And then he'll go near the sideline and maybe he'll take a 12-yard sack, or maybe he'll get hit trying to throw the ball away. And it's like, what are we doing here? And then the next play, he'll do the same thing, but then find, you know, Jermaine Burton 30 yards down the field for a big pickup on 3rd and long. It's really interesting how he's able to kind of shake off play by play. No matter what happens, he's going to try to execute, and almost to a fault sometimes, like he will keep with his 1 and 2 reads downfield and not check it down. And it doesn't help that he doesn't have the strongest arm when he's trying to throw it to the flats, short and outside, but he's also never seen a matchup downfield he doesn't want. So from that standpoint, I think he just a lot of teams have been dropping 8 in the coverage, 7 in the coverage, making them play in front of him. They've tried spying. It doesn't really work. So I think it's stopping Alabama's running backs, keeping him in 3rd and long, 3rd and medium, and trying to make sure that he just can't run the ball twice on 3rd and 4th down and pick it up. Because when they get a chance on 1st and 2nd down, they're going to throw a gadget play out there, whether it be with Kendrick Law or some of their running backs, or Jermaine Burton will be running down the field almost every other play just because he's their best deep ball threat. And if Jalen Milroe feels comfortable, it's going to be a long day. But also, I don't think Alabama, not really since the LSU game, has had the, you know, all and out offensive masterclass that would scare me too much. It's one of those things where you have to force him into making the mistake and then, you know, making sure you're not making it too easy for him.
On a similar note, I mean, how much of a drop-off do you think there has been at the offensive skill positions compared to maybe recent years? I mean, obviously, the NFL is loaded with elite former Bama receivers and running backs, and it seems like this year's group doesn't have the same big-name recognition that maybe some teams in the past have.
Definitely. And Ja'Cory Brooks, who was more of a special teams play and reserve receiver, just transferred a couple weeks ago. And they were waiting on his, you know, injury status to wonder if he'd get back, but he won't. And I think that just goes to show this wide receiver core is really being propped up by second and third year players, whether they're transfers or not. Kendrick Law, Isaiah Bond, Kobe Prentice, none of them are going to be really household names aside from Isaiah Bond, who'll, you know, be forever tied to the 4th and 31 Iron Bowl catch. The rest of these guys, you know, they do an okay job of getting open in space. They're athletic and they're shifty. The people and the pieces that really, I think, stand out and you don't want to circle if you're an opposing team, Kendrick Law, you know, he said it himself, that Deebo Samuel type, they'll put him in the backfield, they'll put him in the slot, they'll try to give it to him on end arounds. They'll put him out there to return some kicks. He's pretty, pretty talented and finds a way to get the ball. The tight end group, you know, they have Amari Kneeblack, CJ Dupree. Some of these guys are serviceable and they've done some good things. But yeah, I think Alabama's strength this season offensively is not, they haven't needed a guy. They haven't needed someone to step up. And that's a question we had last year, and they didn't need him because of Bryce Young. And we had that question this year. And Jalen Miller's playmaking has, I think, relieved some of the need for, you know, third down, who are they going to go to? Well, I don't know if that's much of a question when you have Jalen Milroe dance in the pocket for 10, 15 seconds at a time and make someone get open or try to get it himself.
I got one more question on the offense before we switch to defense. I was pouring through the stats earlier and I was amazed. Like, Alabama's given up 43 sacks this year. It's eighth most in the country. You hinted at it earlier. How much of that is Jalen Milroe just holding on to the ball too long? How much of that is the offensive line?
Yeah, I think the first 5 weeks of the season, they did not know what to do with the offensive line. Like, in training camp, our veteran fall camp, the offensive line was going to be some variation of Proctor. We'd see how it'd go at left guard. There'd be Seth McLaughlin, who's a longtime starter at center, Tyler Booker, who is like a stud sophomore, and then J.C. Latham, who's projected to be a first-round NFL pick. They decided to flip it around because Caden Proctor was struggling so much on the left side. They tried to move Booker over to add some veteran stability, and that just created a hole at right guard, and that they spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. So when Jaden Roberts came in, I think around the time of that Texas A&M game, he got his first start by Tennessee, he had really locked himself in. They started to figure things some things out. I think the sack numbers now are a byproduct of Jalen hanging on the pocket a bunch. I think earlier in the season, they had no time. The offense wasn't really getting into any sort of rhythm or groove because Jalen was processing fast enough and the line was leaky. Now, you know, I think they've limited some of those mistakes, even though the numbers still, yeah, they're not great.
Yeah, let's talk about that Alabama defense. I mean, you said early on here that, you know, it's one of the best in the country. You know, when you look at the stats as far as just Michigan's defense, you know, compared to Alabama's defense, you know, Alabama lags a little bit, but I think our listeners probably know already, but if they don't, I'll remind them that, you know, the offenses that these teams have faced, of course, factor in there. I mean, Michigan got, you know, half of its games against Nebraska, Rutgers, Michigan State, Iowa, Minnesota, East Carolina. Those are all teams that are near the bottom of the country, you know, in offensive production. So, yeah, what has made this Alabama defense so good? What do they do well?
Yeah, I mean, any Nick Saban team, I think, will start with the secondary. Those guys have been joked about being, you know, his kids, his babies this year, and I don't think you can really argue that. Caleb Downs, as a freshman, like everyone has said, you know, wow, he doesn't look like a freshman. Wow, you want to build a DB? That's what you'll create, especially at a safety. And he's come in, and early in the season, I think you saw some freshman mistakes where he'd get burned deep. He let someone get behind him when he was playing like kind of that deep center field role. This year, that's not happening. Or towards the back half of the year, it's not happening. They put him on Brock Bowers in the SC Championship game. And Brock, I think, still had five catches, and it wasn't completely healthy. But aside from that first drive, Brock Bowers didn't really make a huge impact in that game. Malachi Moore has done a little bit of everything. Veteran player, captain. That's not even mentioning they've probably two top 10, top 15 cornerbacks in Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry, who have just built up this reputation of, like, Terrion will be the one that gets picked on, which is weird because he led the SEC with five interceptions. And then Kool-Aid McKinstry, I think, only has like three or four interceptions for his entire career because just no one throws at him. So it's really impressive in that side. And then the defensive line starts with, obviously, Dallas Turner, who had some of the national acclaim, and he was Alabama's first consensus All-American this season. Chris Braswell, you know, he's risen at least a round or two in some NFL mock drafts because of his performance this year, 7.5, 8 sacks. The defensive line has depth at linebacker. They can pretty much get away with the three-man rotation with Deontay Lawson, Jihad Campbell, who will come off the bench, and then the Georgia transfer, Tresman Marshall. So they have experience, they have depth in places. You know, they're the offensive or the, excuse me, the pass defense breakdowns that they've had were confusing at times last year. They were downright scary a bit in the Texas game. The first drive of the Tennessee game didn't look great, but overall, they've just shown an ability to figure out what you're doing and stop it. I think if you go back, Georgia was the first team, I think in like 2 months, to score more than 10 points in the second half against Alabama. And, you know, that was after Georgia also crushed them on that first drive. So it's been really impressive to see that defense come together.
I'm a little curious about a specific player. I mean, obviously, Damon Payne was a five-star recruit from Belleville, a very highly touted prospect in the state when he was coming up. Michigan had some interest, but never seemed like they pushed really hard for him. I think he's a junior now. What would you say his role has been with the team this season?
I think for some guys who don't come in right away, I think there's a bit of a track where you may get some snaps, some reps, and then you're going to be expected to be a veteran piece down the line, whether it be like a second teamer when you're potentially considering transferring or leaving. And then, you know, by your senior year, you're going to be expected to be a rotational piece at the minimum. And I think this year with the defensive line, they've taken kind of that. They've Jaheim Otis, Tim Smith, Justin Aboigbe, they've all really bounced around and some cross trains and different techniques to get some playing time there. And that's led to guys like Damon Payne, like Jamarion Latham, who maybe you could see, hey, there's maybe a role for them this year, not really progressing as much as maybe earlier in the season. And that's because I just don't think they've needed him. I think Damon Payne's a guy that would be expected to fill in because next year they'll be losing 3, 4, 5 defensive tackles, especially after two of their underclassmen have put themselves in the portal over the last week.
Nick, I think when you look at the Alabama defense on paper, really good edge rushers, really good cornerbacks. What would you say would be the key to, I guess, beating the defense? Is it simply getting rid of the ball quickly and throwing over the middle of the field? Or how have teams been able to kind of, you know, be successful against this Crimson Tide defense?
You have to have a really good coordinator to figure out how to put Alabama's linebackers on an island and try to change up their secondary. Because Malachi Moore is really, really aggressive toward the ball. And he's been burned a couple times this year in just kind of some mismatch in coverage of him trying to read something and then something behind him pops open for 25, 30 yards. A couple plays this year have ended up with, you know, Chris Braswell covering a running back in the slot. You know, that's just any team will take that matchup no matter how good Chris Braswell has done this year. I think if you can kind of take some of these mismatches, and in addition to all the little stuff of getting the ball out quickly to avoid the third and longs, I think that'll go a long way. I think the one thing you need to make sure Alabama doesn't get away with, and that's their mistakes. Because this is an issue for Nick Saban's team last year. It's been controlled to some extent this year, but still pops up every once in a while. So Alabama will commit some penalties. They will make some mistakes. And you have to keep them pressured on that. You have to make sure that if they give you a first down, that drive ends in points. That's what Georgia did. Hell, that's what USF did in week 3 to get on the board. And I think that's the key. And, you know, we didn't talk about this offensively, but I think Alabama, off the top of my head, there's been at least 6 touchdowns taken off the board this year due to a penalty or a legal shift or holding or something coming back. And those are mistakes that I think cost them against Texas. People thought it'd cost them against Georgia. And if you want to, you know, start splitting hairs and see where the advantages would be in this Michigan game, I think that's it. Like, which team, this is, you know, maybe as vanilla as it sounds, who will be the best coached and make the other team, you know, show their limitations more.
Well, Michigan is the least penalized team in the country so far this season. I know we're still a few weeks away from the game, but, you know, we've already been talking about maybe how it might play out a little bit. And the thought, at least for me, is that it could be low scoring. I mean, two really good defenses, and you know, Michigan is shown almost a stubbornness as far as running the football. Like they're going to do it early, they're going to do it often, they're going to stick with it, and it's worked for them. They've eventually gotten enough to in that part of the game to win. They've, you know, gotten a few to pop late. It's helped with ball control and time of possession and things like that. I guess are you envisioning something similar here? A game maybe in the low to mid 20s or yeah, maybe can the offenses, you know, break through somehow in this game?
Part of me thinks that just because it's a big game and this will be on the stage of Pasadena, I feel like that game just doesn't end 12-9, even though, like, if you in my head, that feels like a game that'll come down to kicks and some field goals. But I think Alabama, I think both offenses will get big plays. I think Blake Horn will pop off a big run. I think Jermaine Burton will make a big catch, which he's done against Michigan in a playoff game a couple years ago. But I think that the offenses have enough talent. These coaching staffs are well enough. They'll have enough time to prepare that they'll find something to kind of get the offenses moving a little bit. But I think I'll come back to this. At the end of the day, I think the defenses will impose their will. I think the defenses will be able to keep the game close no matter what. I think the biggest piece is, you know, who will make that turnover late and will they be able to capitalize on it? I think this might be a game where not whoever holds the ball last, but that team who gave away three points in the second half or before halftime, that maybe one of those games where we're coming back to and thinking like, oh, that early moment really cost them. Because maybe you guys would be able to answer this better, but like from an Alabama fan standpoint, I think the way they performed in that SEC championship game alleviated a lot of concerns of like, will they step up on a big stage? And I think to our earlier conversation about like the Big Ten, SEC, I think like Michigan fans, that's a bit of a question. Like they've looked great this year. Will the light, when the light's shining, you know, playing against a team like Alabama, seeing that jersey and logo on the sideline, how will it shape up? I think that'd be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Michigan, besides Ohio State, Penn State, hasn't really faced much of a difficult schedule. And obviously, we know how they've performed the last 2 years in the college football playoff, getting blasted by Georgia and then losing to a TCU team last year that many believe they should have beaten. We saw what Georgia did to them in the national championship. So I think it's a fascinating matchup. And I mean, even with the Harbaugh and Saban dynamic too, it should be interesting. But I know it's a few weeks out, but is there, and it's only a 1.5-point spread right now. Are you leaning a certain way with the prediction or still undecided?
So this is my first full year on the beat, and I told myself I wanted the team to get me to an SEC championship and I wouldn't complain. I thought the bowl game would be fun. The Rose Bowl is my personal favorite college football game ever. I'm already, can't wait for that third quarter sunset shot. But all that considering, for the game itself, it's hard to pick against Alabama or the way they played the last couple weeks. The version of Jalen Milroe that shows up that day, if he's a little too crazy and loose with the ball compared to if he's you know, played the way he has over the last month, I think might be the biggest determining factor. Yeah, I think I'll keep it this way. I think Michigan's a really good team. Obviously, I think they're deserving of being in the playoff, but this Alabama team all year has run into itself. And like, that's been the thing they've had to get over is just stopping their own miscues, making sure that they're keeping themselves on track. And if that's the test for a Nick Saban team that has a month to prepare, I kind of have to put my money on them.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against Alabama, but it's you know, you can say the same thing about this Michigan team that is obviously undefeated and just, you know, answered the bell week after week, you know, including late in the season with their toughest game. So, yeah, we talked about our right after the matchups were announced, you know, we had our little debate over whether it should have been Alabama, it should have been Florida State. But I think, you know, there's no doubt that with this matchup we've got, it's the reason we're so excited about it. It should be very, very competitive.
Yeah, we're not having this conversation if it's Florida State. Well, when we are, like, you guys are talking to a Florida State writer, but I don't think we're talking about we're not talking about a 1-point spread. And I think that's what makes this game so fun is that, you know, I mentioned about it with the SEC fan base, but there's no favorite in this game. Like, I don't think either way, no matter what argument you make, this game is going to be fun. I think it's going to come down to some exciting play. And who knows? It could be one that we don't even know the start of the game yet. It could be Jam Miller has been getting carries for Alabama with Jace McClellan hurt, their lead running back. You know, Jam Miller can go off with 3 touchdowns. Wouldn't be surprised. You know, Alabama may not be able to stop Michigan's ground game. And I'd be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. Like, it's going to be a fun one with the way these matchups work out. I'll ask you guys, what do you think? It's 1-point Michigan, 1-point favorites right now. Do you think that's about where it should be going in?
I do, yeah. And I lean Alabama, and I told these guys and I've told other folks before. I mean, I question whether Michigan can do it on the big stage. I know Michigan fans don't want to hear that, but like Ryan mentioned earlier, like they lost the last 2 years in the semifinal. They're 1-6 in bowl games under Jim Harbaugh. They just can't seem to win against like a top tier opponent. So we'll see how they fare. I'm really curious to see how they handle everything. You know, the players have talked about it the last couple of weeks of like, they've been here, they've been in the playoff. They were there 2 years ago, and they kind of, at that point, they treated it as like a vacation. Like they'd won the first Big Ten championship in a long time. They've gotten the playoff. It was all great. Last year, I think they maybe went into the semifinal game against TCU with maybe a little bit more confidence than maybe they should have, or maybe a little. And this year, it's a reality check. A lot of these guys came back specifically to play in this game and get and win a national championship. So I think there's a lot of motivation on Michigan's side. I think they're going to come ready to play, but at the end of the day, do they have enough? And that's what I'm curious to see. I'm ready for it. I think it's going to be a good game. It's two blue blood college football programs in one of the biggest bowl games on the slate. So I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said too, it's hard to bet against Alabama with Saban getting a month to prepare, and there's a reason why they've been so successful in these national semifinal games. It's because I think they're able to perform on the big stage. And yeah, last year, I mean, I thought it was guaranteed. Like Michigan would be able to beat a TCU team that, yeah, they had a great quarterback, a couple of really dynamic offensive weapons, but a very porous defense. And I mean, yeah, Michigan scored some points and moved the ball, but also made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. And yes, every team is different. There's a lot of guys back from last year's team. They could say they're all motivated and businesslike, but this is the Rose Bowl. It's one. They're the number one team in the country. They've had the sign stealing scandal going on all year. It's a lot of outside noise, and maybe they play a little tense, knowing that if they lose, it'll be another disappointment. Whereas I feel like this Alabama team might be like, hey, we lost in week two. Everyone counted us out, and like whatever, let's just keep this train rolling. So I'm probably leaning Alabama too, but not by much. I wouldn't be surprised if either team wins.
Well, we'll have continued coverage leading up to the game on mlive.com/Wolverines, and you can read Nick Alvarez's work at al.com as we prepare for the January 1 semifinal matchup at the Rose Bowl. Nick, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, of course, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys out there.